Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting in regular session tomorrow, the 23rd. Meeting starts at 6 p.m. at the Rich and Services Building. On the phone with me, I've got Summit County Planner Sean Lewis. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
Let's see. First up is a public hearing and possible action regarding the proposed installation of a new wireless telecommunications tower.
Mouthful.
Yeah, so is this located behind Walmart here? We've talked about this before because the options include kind of a fake tree for a pole or just a pole.
So at the second meeting in May, we took some photo simulations to the Planning Commission. Verizon Wireless is the company that's proposing the tower. It'll be about 90 feet tall. And they originally had proposed the monopine, which is the fake tree looking thing. And we took that to the Planning Commission and said, you know, this is what they're proposing. But we feel like having a kind of a lone tree out in the middle of nowhere or out behind the Walmart would be more visual impactful than the traditional monopole or the traditional just steel tower. So we allowed the Planning Commission to look at several different photo simulations, and they came back to us with some options and said, hey, can you look at these microsites that we've heard about, can you look at the difference in the tower heights and a couple different things? And then they said, if none of those options will work, then come back and we'll allow you to do the monopole, because we feel like that's the least visual impact, and the pole kind of blends in with the surroundings more than the monopine does. And Verizon went back and did some analysis and provided us as staff with their literature and their evaluation of it that said, you know, as far as the microsites go, you'd have to have they only work for up to maybe 60 users, where the one pole would work for 1,200 users. So you'd have to have so many different of those microsites around to compensate for the capacity of the one pole. So they've requested to go back to the Planning Commission with the pole. And so the proposal as it stands today is for the traditional cell tower pole.
All right. Well, the Planning Commission had also asked the applicant to look for a technology, the so-called small cell, that wouldn't be as obtrusive of a pole. So what were the results of that?
Well, those are the microsites that I was talking about. Where you'd have to have, you know, 30 different microsites. Those are meant ideally to boost. You put one, say, in the Richens building if people weren't getting cell service inside the library, for instance. They could put one of those microsites in. It would help boost the signal in that area, but it's not an effective tool for widespread coverage. And so, and that with the capacity issues, you know, where those can only have up to, I think it's 60 users on one of those microsites, where the tower could have 1,200, you can do the math on how many of those microsites you'd have to match the capacity that one tower would have.
Okay, let's see. You're also, the planner for the discussion and work session, regarding the potential amendments to the Posatch Dog Kennel conditional use permit. This got quite a bit of controversy when it was first proposed as a dog kennel breeding and boarding business back in 2010 and 2011. Now they're proposing a change in use. So what are they proposing?
So the original proposal that was approved in 2010 was for Mr. Bolin, who keeps dogs at his residence there in Silver Creek, and then was doing these mushing tours where he'd go up East Canyon or up at the Canyons Resort or a couple different places and do these mushing tours where you could go and sit in the dog sleds and ride up with him. And he's changed his focus a little bit where he wants to transition from doing that type of business to doing a full-time training for races like the Iditarod, is the most famous mushing race out there. And so he wants to train for that and has come to us with a request to amend his CUP to allow for him to focus on that training and allow for some of these some of the changes of his conditions to allow him to focus on that a little bit better. So the couple of the changes that he is asking for are to be able to spay or neuter his animals on site, and that would not be or alter his animals on site. It would not be a commercial breeding, so nobody else could bring their animals in to have that done, but he wants to be able to do that. He wants to be able to tether his animals outside the kennel, at least so it can clean the kennel out once in a while. There's certain things like this. He has not submitted an official application, but he did approach staff with, what would this be? And as staff, we felt, this was such a hot topic 5 years ago that we felt like it would be best to let the Planning Commission have a work session and say, this is what he's looking to do. Is there anything here that you're comfortable with, or is there anything? And then based on their reaction, we'd either not make any changes at all, or we'd bring it back for a full public hearing to amend his conditional use.
Yeah, so, is it a less intense use than what's happening now?
I think as far as intensity, I don't think the neighbors would notice much of a difference. It's just to allow him a little bit more flexibility in what he's doing out there. Again, we would not recommend, and staff would not recommend, any kind of commercial operation where people could bring him dogs or animals to him for veterinary type services or breeding or storage, boarding, any of those types of things. This is just for him to allow some flexibility. The other part of that is our animal control ordinance has changed since he got his approval and is a little bit more restrictive than what his conditional use permit was. And so he'd like to have some of those conditions be removed so that he can be under the current animal control ordinance as well.
Yeah, so over the past 4 or 5 years, have you had any complaints from neighbors? Because I know there were concerns about noise, the barking, and
sure,
perhaps smells.
Sure. We have had a couple of complaints out there. Every time we've received a complaint, just like any complaint that comes into the county, we give that to our code enforcement officer who will go and investigate. And really, the complaints were really coming from one individual who has since moved. And it's amazing that after that individual moved, the complaints have dropped off. The other point of that is every time there was a complaint, it went out and investigated, and Mr. Bullen was always found to be in compliance.
All right. Before I let you go, Sean, I know that I've also got Ray on the phone with us, but
sure.
the Colony Hill Track lift, this is actually a Mere Causes item, but can mm-hmm. either of you say anything about it? Planning Commission was pretty stern with the applicant last time about the visual impact of this chairlift.
I think Ray would be better able to answer that than I would.
Okay. Hey, Sean, thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
So, and good morning to you, Ray. Can you address that at all? Hi, Ray, you still there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. So that Colony chairlift, I know it's Amir's item, but can you say anything about it? The Planning Commission pretty stern with the applicant about its visual.
Yeah, the Planning Commission was pretty stern with them, and so Amir has been meeting with the applicant, and I believe what they've done is they've come up with some options, and they wanted to bring it to the Planning Commission to discuss the options of, the best way to mute the colors on that thing, because it had been quite reflective when you view it from down in the valley. And so they just wanted to come up with some colors, and they're going to talk about that. Put that up.
Okay, that'll be done in work session. But during the regular mm-hmm. session, one of the projects you've been working on is that we've got a public hearing and proposed action on the proposed amendments to the Canyon Corners Development Agreement. So at this point, it looks like we've got two buildings, the 43,000-square-foot grocery. I think still Whole Foods is moving there, and another building. The staff report says an 18,000-square-foot retail on the first floor, and then on the second floor, nearly 20,000 square feet of affordable housing. So staff recommendation on this?
Well, We're having a public hearing. We're not making a recommendation. We're just having another public hearing, but we are moving toward a recommendation for a positive approval. And primarily the reason is that the applicant has met the criteria for the affordable housing, The community benefits, they've improved the community benefits that were approved originally on the plat. They're going to provide a bike share system. They're planning to do a contribution to get the Kimball shuttle going, a shuttle system that would run around the Kimball Junction area so a person can park their car in one location and shop the entire junction by using the shuttle. And again, the affordable housing and so on. So they're moving towards getting the approval. I think what we're planning to do on Tuesday night is to get more feedback from the Planning Commission as to whether or not there are more outstanding issues that need to be addressed as far as, you know, technical issues like grading, architecture, the lighting plan, landscaping, those types of things.
So is Whole Foods still proposed to be the anchor tenant there?
As far as I know, they are.
All right. And as I mentioned, nearly 20,000 square feet of affordable housing on that second story. Does that meet? Because that the applicant didn't think he needed to provide any affordable housing. The code has changed, though, since this was first approved, and apparently he does.
Yeah, the original discussion was whether or not they needed to meet the affordable housing requirement. We had a back and forth with the applicant, and the applicant agreed to put that affordable housing on. So we didn't have to go through the process of appeals and discussions. They took the initiative and just said, let's put it into the second building and move along. So,
well, in your report, you say that this 20,000 square feet is not counted as additional density. How come?
It's one of the, in the code, there's an allowance for the affordable housing to be exempt from the density calculations, and essentially that's an incentive for the applicant to provide the affordable housing because we would like to have it on site. So that's one of the incentives from the code.
All right. How many units are we talking about?
It's 20 one-bedroom units. They'll all be located on top of the second floor. The idea is to provide housing for people that work on site so they can live and work right there on the site.
So they all have their own restrooms and kitchen facilities, all individual like that?
Uh-huh. They have a bedroom, one bedroom, a restroom, and a kitchen, essentially is how it's laid out.
All right.
So a small seating area.
So they're probably, what, about 800 square feet each or something? Or?
Yeah. That's approximately what they are. I don't have the plan directly in front of me, but they are about 700 square feet.
All right. At the last meeting, the Planning Commission a bit concerned about a tap room in Whole Foods. Your report says, though, it will not be a nightclub, a bar, or speakeasy.
Yeah, the original promotion item kind of highlighted that. And so the concern was that they were turning it into something above and beyond the deli-type use that they are, that you see in the Whole Foods. And so what they've done is they've explained to us and talked to us about how it's more of a component to the deli rather than a separate issue where, you know, you go in and have a party or, you know, it wouldn't be somewhere where you'd want to go for, like a bar or something.
Okay. And then access onto Landmark Drive, that was also a concern. How is that being handled?
The applicant has given us a couple of different options. One would be a no right-hand turn out of the site onto Landmark where you go down and use the roundabout and come back. They're continuing to work with our engineering department to ensure that everything's copacetic on that. So.
It would be a no left-hand turn, right-hand only. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No left-hand turn. Sorry about that.
Okay. Anything else?
I think we got it.
Okay. Hey, Ray, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Lizzie. Have a great day.
That's Summit County Planner Ray Milner. 8:31 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, longtime Park City resident and developer Rory Murphy, one of six candidates on the ballot for Park City Council in November. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Rory.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us about yourself and why you wanted to run for council.
I don't know where I should start. I've moved here over 20 years ago, and worked for United Park City Mines Company for 10 years. I came from Vermont, grew up in Vermont. I spent some time in the Army. Worked on, first project I worked on was the Silver Mine Adventure, if you can think back that far. And after I left United Park, when we took the, we privatized the company, it was a public company. And back in 2003, we privatized it, sold it to Talisker, and then I went on to Silver Star, and just now doing 820 down here at the Rio Grande. So,
okay, so just those two development projects then, 820 and Silver Star?
No, there's been quite a few more. I mean, how much detail do you want me to get into? I can probably bore you for quite
some time.
That's
where you make your living,
time.
Though, as developing property.
Yes.
Or redeveloping it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That and working for free for nonprofits. That's how I make my living.
Well, you've also served on the Park City Planning Commission. I know that you're the co-chairman of the Master Planning Committee. Any other kind of civic, you know, appointments that you've done?
Well, yeah. Planning Commission, Judicial Selection Commission, Soils Commission. I've been on the Wasatch County Roads Commission. I've been on I served on the advisory board for Mountain Trails. I was on the Historical Society for a number of years. I've coached for years. I haven't coached for a while, but I did when I first came to town. In fact, coached the high school lacrosse team. This school master planning committee, Rotary, Park City Vets, working with the Peace House right now. I'm on their advisory board for their new facility. That's all I can think of off the top of my head.
Now, with the Planning Commission, though, you served and what, dropped out before your term ended?
No, finished the term.
Finished the term?
Yep.
Yeah,
didn't reapply. So, yeah.
So, I mean, given all of that, I mean, what skills do you think you bring to being a good city council member?
Well, I think that the real skills of being a city council member, I mean, they're myriad, but you better be a darn good listener. You better be a good communicator. You'd better not have a chip on your shoulder. There's a lot of nuances to everything we do. And one thing that serving on Planning Commission and the School Commission and some of these others, you know, the thing about it is, in this town, is you peel back one layer of the onion and there's eight layers under it, and there's always reasons for why things occurred. And, you know, if you go in there thinking, you know, the world is black and white and this is how it's going to be, I'm not so sure that's an effective way of getting anything done.
Yeah, certainly growth is kind of reared its head, and as it does every election, the big topic in every election. So tell us why somebody should elect a developer who has helped, you know, contribute to that growth.
Well, I guess, Leslie, I would answer your question. Let me give you the Zoolander answer to that. I'm going to answer your question with a question. Has all that growth been bad?
And your answer is?
I'm asking you.
I'm not being interviewed.
There has been growth in this town. I don't think anybody that has lived here has had any illusions in that regard. But there's, you look at what type of growth has been less than desirable and what type of growth has increased the economic base of the town and made the town a better place to live. And I'd argue with you that Silver Star probably falls into the later category. You may argue against me, but that was a brownfield site and an old mine site. And I think darn few people that even live in that neighborhood that would like it to be a brownfield site and an old mine site. And so, you know, you talk about growth in general terms, and I think you're talking about a very broad topic. And I don't think you can look at it in a narrow perspective. You know, we are what we are. Vail did just acquire Park City Mountain Resort. Vail brings with it one heck of a lot of firepower. And I think that there is pressures on this town that need to be acknowledged. And I do believe that coming from both sides of the aisle, that I've got a pretty good perspective on that.
Did you happen to attend last week's growth forum?
I was in Vermont. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But really what we talked about was, I mean, there's certainly some entitled units here in Park City. You know, I think there were 4,000, and they're mostly just the development and the parking lots at the two resorts. But around us, I mean, we've got another 14,000 or so in the Snyderville Basin, like another 20 in Wasatch County, with Park City kind of being the nexus on that. And so it's like this growth is on our doorstep. I mean, what can we do about it, if anything?
Well, and I guess it's, again, you're asking me this, like, broadly general question. And, you know, what can we do about it? What we are going to have to do about it is react. You know, people ask me, well, what's your platform? And I say, well, my platform's decided for me. I have no, there will be three major issues that face us, like, that will be crucible issues to this town. They are transportation, they are workforce housing, and they are large project development. I mean, there is very few lots left in town. There is very few small development parcels left in town. But you have Park City Mountain Resort parking lots, Deer Valley parking lots, Treasure Mountain, and then whatever ends up happening with Beaupaw. And so that's what's in front of us. And so, you know, to have a background of large project development, I think helps the city to understand and articulate some of the issues that are going to come across the board. And what's happening in the counties is, you know, I think that people really have a very unrealistic view of just what that impact's going to be. You know, the Jordanelle, you're dead on. You're talking, you said 20,000. I've heard 14. I'm not sure it matters after a certain critical mass. The new Silver Creek Village that's going in up here in the county. And I think really what the most important part of that is going to be communication with Wasatch County, communication with Summit County, which communication with Summit County is getting a lot better. You got some really bright people over there, Pat Putt, Chris Robinson, Claudia. I think our communication to date with Wasatch County has been atrocious. You know, those are our direct neighbors. They are our workforce. They are service all of our economy. And they're piled up on 248 every morning. And that, like you say, with another X number of thousands of units, that will only get exacerbated. So we have a lot of communication that needs to take place interjurisdictional, and not just in town, but with everybody around us. So,
yeah, I wanted to ask you real quick. I'm not sure this was part of your tenure there on the city council or Park City Council Planning Commission, though, discussing the whole notion of this form-based code. Are you a supporter of that?
That was after my time. And I have to say that, you know, I've had some good talks with some of the planning commissioners about it, but I have to be blunt with you that I'm still not sure I understand it. You know, there's parts of it that I get. There are parts of it I don't get. And so So as far as form-based code, do I support it? Do I not support it? I can't tell you that right now.
Okay. Anything else, Rory, that you wanted to mention?
Nope.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That is Park City Council candidate Rory Murphy. Newstime now, 8:42. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the Local News Hour on KPCW. And in the studio with me now from the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, I have Director Rena Jordan along with Recreation Manager Brian Hatton. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Rena, let's just start with you here. We've got from last week's board meeting, you talked a little bit about the Toll Canyon Management Plan. What's happening there?
I would say we talked a long time about that. We spent probably 40 minutes talking about that. Wendy Fisher gave a presentation to our board of the draft management plan that's been underway for probably the last year in series form. We have it finally at a phase that we are going to present it to the public. It really is about what our responsibilities, what the strategy and responsibilities are, both as the land management company, or land management trust, and us as the responsible party of how we will steward and take care of Toll Canyon, and including what our hiking-only plans are and biking trail plans are going to be, as well as hopefully future access into the canyon.
So does this come back then?
It will. The plan is that we will begin to present it in public from an electronic standpoint for people to start having a look at it. And over the next 45 days, we're going to try and host two open houses. And those open houses will give people an opportunity to come in and give us some feedback. And then we'll see if there are any amendments or changes that need to be made, and then represent it to our board in hopefully final format for adoption.
All right. News this morning is that, I don't know if it was the board or just the staff there at the Rec District, that Runamuck Dog Park, now no bikes, huh?
No bikes. So we heard the feedback. We've experienced some of the conflict out there, and we decided to change. We've put signage up that it really will be for dogs running amok and walkers together, no bikes coming through there. We are working on a bypass for bikes because some people were using it really as a cut through to get up to Mid Mountain through the Olympic Park, that through that direction. So we are working on a workabout there. And then we're looking at next year budgeting to create an area that can be combined bikes and dogs on the other side of the street where the 5K is. So
effective immediately then?
It is effective. It was effective as of a week ago Friday.
So. All right. Also talking about the board meeting, the ice arena, the strategic plan. Any updates there? We've got the, I know the...
Brian's ready to talk about that one. I'm looking at him to my left here. So
We went through a design review with five different companies, and we were able to narrow it down to one. And so now we have one company that's going to do a little research for us to see where, what type of facility will work best in that location, and fee analysis, and both as far as building it as and general usage, and when we can retain some of the, get some of the money back.
So we're talking about.
I would just add that what part of this study was is a three-way study between Park City, Municipal, ourselves, and the Olympic Athletic Olympic Foundation, that in Colin Hilton, and we each are contributing $10,000 toward this study to be conducted in the feasibility stage.
So we don't even know if it's going to be a separate building or an addition at this point,
correct,
right?
Correct. They're just going to do all that research now.
Okay. When do you expect to have some results?
I think it was a 10-week timeline.
Correct. It's 10 to 12-week timeline. We I think that the RFP gave them the opportunity to lay out up to 12 weeks from the time that it will be. Hopefully, the city council will be the awarding council on Thursday of this week. And then if they give it the stamp of approval, then it will begin.
All right. Also, you've got a couple new tennis courts up and running.
Yep, we do. We at Willow Creek Park, we have two more tennis courts there. So there's four total. And also with those tennis courts, we were able to put on four pickleball lines for the courts. So there's it's kind of a dual activity type of facility now. And if they wanted to use the nets, there's no pickleball nets up there. But we do have them to check out at the field house. They just put a deposit down and can take them over to the Willow Creek Park and then bring them back when they're done. But it's a really nice facility if everyone needs to come out and check it out.
First come, first serve? Is that how it works?
It is first come, first serve. And if there's waiting, you either finish up your set or it's basically an hour. And then so the next group can come in. So we just want everyone to play nice so everybody has the opportunity to use the facility.
Okay. And then let's give us an update with regard to Summit Community Garden. It had shut down last year as we kind of moved things. It's up and growing?
It is growing. We're excited about it. The garden actually moved to the east, so it's now adjacent to the parking lot at Matkanute Park. We have just started the fencing, and over the next couple of months, we hope to I want to say by mid-August, start planting. I mean, that's kind of our hopeful dream, as long as weather cooperates and all that stuff. But the fence posts are up. We will start doing irrigation. It's a great relationship with the Summit Community Gardens. They want to do a lot of education there, so we feel that the park is a great location for it, with the parking lot, the restrooms, and it was kind of the plan all along to have the garden down by the park.
All right, and then I know that the Park City Day School is kind of offering community garden plantings and stuff, but that all switch over then?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. When we have the garden completed, we'll have the classes there. But right now, the day school does hold a lot of their summer camps.
Okay, and we're actually offering camping in the park, huh?
We are. For those that don't usually get out to the campsites out in the Uintas or anything, we are doing a movie in the park on Saturday, and we are selling campsites. So people can come out and tent in at Trailside Park. It's $10 a spot, and all the proceeds will go to our scholarship fund. But it's a good opportunity just to get out in a tent and be under the stars and watch a movie.
Yeah. So where is the camping going to happen?
Right on the soccer field at Trailside on the upper field. So it's kind of a unique setting. We did it for the first time last year, and it was pretty popular. And this year we've already had probably 10 sites sold. So if they want to go, they better get out there now.
And what movie are you going to be showing?
Big Hero 6. So it's definitely a family movie, kid favorite. So it should be a fun event.
Okay. People just need to contact the rec district then to make those reservations?
Yep, they can contact the rec district or they at 649-1564, extension 10, or go on our website and they can reserve a site there as well.
All right, and then finally the Kids Carnival, that's happening next month.
Yep, July 11th is the Kids Carnival. It's a free event for the community to come out. We'll have the Summit Community Gardens will be there. We'll have yoga, Zumba, a little soccer tennis demo, face painting, bounce houses, all types of fun stuff for kids, and a good event to come out and just relax.
All right. And then, Rena, finally, the budget, do you do it? Your fiscal year here starting?
We are on calendar year, but the tax rates are set now and adopted. They have to be initially adopted by June 30th. And so we have the initial numbers in with valuations and such. And the only thing I wanted to highlight is that with the growth that has happened in the Snyderville Basin, which is our taxing district, and what we had projected for the cost for the issuance of our $25 million bond, the rates are actually about $7 less per $100,000. Than we had projected originally. So it was a good thing. There's been over $600 million in growth in the Snyderville Basin. So it has helped overall with the tax rates that we will assess as a district.
Okay. Hey, anything else you wanted to mention?
The only thing I'll say is Fun Over 50. Go to our website. It has been one of our most popular new programs. There's a hiking club. They're going rafting tomorrow, but it is look for Fun Over 50 on the Basin Recreation website.
Okay, Rena and Brian, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's 8:52. Well, on Thursday, the Kimball Arts Center will be hosting another Art Talk, this time featuring Carl Richards and Ron Lieber talking about money and values. Carl Richards joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So by trade, you're a writer and certified financial planner, and then for fun, you're the sketch guy using a lot of Venn diagrams to kind of explain finance and life in general. So what are you going to be talking about in particular on Thursday?
Well, so my editor at the New York Times, Ron Lieber, will be in town, and his new book, The Opposite of Spoiled, and my new book, The One-Page Financial Plan, sort of present us with a unique opportunity to have a conversation about money, and particularly the role that values. You know, often we think of money as this sort of spreadsheet calculator issue, and it turns out it's not about that at all, right? It's fear and greed, dreams and worries. So we're going to have a conversation about money and the role that emotion and values and behavior play in our decisions when we're in our financial decisions.
So tell me a little bit about Ron's book. I'm guessing you've read it.
Yes, yeah. I have.
And I like the title of it, The Opposite of Spoiled is what?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting, that was one of the questions he was seeking to answer. Like, what is the opposite of spoiled? You know, and often people will use words like generous, you know, or grateful. But that's one of the questions we'll talk about at the art talk on Thursday. But the book is really, really good in terms of teaching, giving you sort of practical examples about how to talk about money with our kids and with our spouses to some degree, but mainly with our kids.
Yeah. I mean, there's been talk about it, and you've probably heard about it. You know how, you know, maybe yours and mine folks have really left their children, you know, some kind of financial legacy, whereas we're not going to be able to do that for our kids. It's kind of like run out. So, I mean, what is that conversation that you need to have with your kids?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, almost any conversation, you know, because we traditionally have had no conversations about money. Kids bring it up and they'll say something like, I mean, I've heard this a lot, something like, oh, our neighbors must be rich. And we say, oh, why are you talking about that? Right. Instead of sort of leaning into that as an opportunity to have a discussion, they learn, oh, I shouldn't talk about that. Like money, sex, politics, and religion. You know, those four things we were all trained never to talk about in polite company. And I think that sets us up with a sort of a bad precedence for our kids, because then they learn not to ask those questions about money. They're never trained how to deal with it. They're never trained how to deal with sort of the, you know, the societal kind of emotional behavioral issues that surround it. So really any question, any topic, any conversation we can have about money is a good one.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I look back, my father didn't tell me, I mean, when I was making a little bit of money, I still should have set some of that aside starting when I was, you know, out of college. Yeah. But I think that's probably the biggest thing that a parent can say is like, you know what, save some of it, save some of it and start now. And then you won't have to work so hard when you're old.
Sure. And that's really challenging for a kid to want to save, for any of us, to be honest, to want to save money without having some connection to why we're doing it. Which is a very fascinating conversation now, because it's like, well, why do you really want to save the money? You know, and when do you want to give some of it away? And how do you spend? And how do you make the decision between something you should be saving for that's really important to you a long ways out and something you really want to buy today? Well, we can't have any of those conversations if we're avoiding them, right? So that's what we'll talk about.
Yeah. So your new book, The One-Page Financial Plan, is that really true?
Yeah, that's a trick title. No, I mean, the goal really was, you know, whenever we think of financial planning, at least whenever I've thought about it, anybody I ask thinks like, oh no, you know, 200 page complex, I'm going to have to see an attorney and an accountant and I'm going to figure all this stuff out. And the reality is, I think that idea of traditional financial planning has gotten in the way of us doing anything. Right. So having some really basic conversations, which I sort of set the framework up in the book, about what is important to you about money. Right. Why are you doing these things? What are the basic, like one or two or three things you could do to move towards that goal you have? And then getting that written. I mean, there is a section in the book where we're trying to get it down to one page. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. My daughter, Ruby, who's 10, I was working on this book for a long time, and I heard her talking to one of her friends. It was also 10. What's your dad do? Oh, my dad's really busy right now. What's he doing? We're writing a book. What's it called? The One-Page Financial Plan. And then there was this long pause, and the friend says, why is it taking him so long to write? Right? So so it's not really one page.
Yeah. So at your drawings, I mean, that's really, you've been writing a column weekly for New York Times for how long now?
Almost 6 years now.
Yeah. And part of that, you've used these diagrams that what started off in, you know, in a bar trying to explain something to the people, and it was just a sketch, but you've really kind of made a, you know, livelihood doing that as well.
Yeah, yeah. So it wasn't a bar. It was in a conference room, right, where I was trying to explain a complex, and it really was born out of a act of desperation, you know, trying to explain a complex subject, or at least a subject we feel is complex. I had some friends who had to make a really important decision about money. They were smart, intelligent people, and I was trying to explain this concept I thought was critical, and I was just getting blank stares. So it wasn't them. It was my lack of ability to explain it. And I thought, geez, what am I going to do? And I said, out of an act of desperation, I stood up and said, no, like this. And I drew just like some boxes and some arrows on the whiteboard behind me in the conference room. And the mood changed. And they said, oh, I get it now. That was 10 years ago. And so now we just every week try to take some complex issue and reduce it down to a simple drawing that can be done with cardstock and a Sharpie.
Oh, cool. So again, as you mentioned, your editor, Ron Lieber, will also be joining you on Thursday, 6 o'clock, Kimball Arts Center. Yep. And what, he's just coming to visit?
No, so it'll be both of us doing this talk together.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah. But he's visiting from.
Yeah, I think he's. I think he's out on vacation with his family.
Oh, nice.
That was he called me and said, "Hey, could we get some people together and have a chat about money?" Because some of his research was done here in Utah, for the book. He came out and interviewed hardworking dairy farming families to find out what they were teaching their kids about how to work and how to earn money and how to save. So he loves Utah. So he'll be here. It'll be both of us. He's going to kind of take my book. And I'm going to take his book, right? And we'll ask each other questions about the opposite book.
Okay. It is free. You're going to have both of your books there for sale and signing. People, I think, just need to call and let them know that they're coming so they can set up enough chairs.
Yeah, I believe there's even a form on the Kimball Art Center's website or call. But if for some reason you forget, just show up. We'll make room for you.
Okay. That's this Thursday again from 6 to 7 p.m. in the main gallery there at the Kimball Art Center. Anything else?
I think that's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Carl, thanks for coming in. KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.